I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Inside the Comedian with me, David Reed. This week, I'll be interviewing Marek Larwood.
Comedian, actor, write-off, impersonator, YouTuber, me trombone, beatboxer, mermaid, froob. Marek Larwood, welcome to Inside the Comedian.
Hello, David.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. It's about bloody time.
I've always waited to the second season to see if, you know, things set in, because that's when they start paying the big money, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes, yes. There's no point being a pioneer in anything, is there?
But that is a question. This is when this starts paying the big money, right?
We'll talk about that at the end.
Okay, sure. That's fine.
Now, in fact, relating to money, you have demanded that I conduct this interview not in front of a live audience, but here, inside a wheelie bin round the back of Snog, the frozen yoghurt place. Why is that?
I'm just getting ready for my next part as a homeless person.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. What's that for?
Well, it's not, actually. I'm just preparing. Things have been a bit quiet lately, so I'm in my next part in life.
Will be a homeless person.
Yeah, rather than an actual role.
Right, OK. When do you start working on that?
Well, this is it now.
This is it now.
I thought we'd workshop it now.
Oh, how wonderful. And thank you for inviting me into your home. I guess, is this your home?
Well, sorry about the smell of piss. I mean, a lot of that was there before I moved in.
Right, you do get out of the wheelie bin to go relieve yourself.
Well, no, I don't, but that's part of it. I got a lot of people to piss into it.
Right.
Why? Just so I could get into character.
Oh, I see. If we could go back to your comedy career when that existed.
Yes.
You started as a solo performer back in 2003, winning the So Your Friends Think You're Funny Award. What did your act involve back then?
It was mainly I used to do a lot of one-liners.
Mm.
I say one-liners, I just mean sentences.
Sure.
I wouldn't necessarily say they were jokes. I would just say sentences.
Do you remember any of your best sentences off the top of your head?
Well, no, that's what people said about my act. It was so great that they instantly forgot it.
Forgot it immediately?
Mid-sentence.
They were so in the moment that they did not recall a single bit of it.
Yeah.
Well, that must be useful for just repeating material, though.
Well, it's great. I mean, the standard back then was so low.
Right.
That was how I was able to win all of these animal-related competitions.
Absolutely.
And like Spunking Squirrel.
Spunking Squirrel. I remember Spunking Squirrel. Is Spunking Squirrel still going?
No, I think it stopped halfway through the jump competition.
Right, yes, yes.
One of the very short
As everyone had just sort of drifted off.
Yeah, with indifference.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was just sentences back in 2003, wasn't it?
You didn't need jokes. It was just a sentence. And if you had a good adjective in there, that always helped.
Yes.
And that's a describing word, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yes, it is. To describe an object, not an action.
Yes, so that always really, once you put it in a sentence, I mean, you often get a gasp.
Wow. Who do you think changed that as being the norm? Who came along and actually started putting things that might be mildly amusing in there?
I think it was Rasta Howard.
Rasta Howard, yes, yes. I remember Rasta Howard.
Yeah.
He's still going strong, actually.
He's doing very well. I supported Rasta Howard on tour of Jamaica and a lot of places like that.
Right. Places like Jamaica? I mean, do you mean other places in the Caribbean or do you mean just countries?
Countries like Jamaica.
Countries like Jamaica.
Begin with a J.
So those are...
That's all
right.
My chest is...
Yes,
okay. They are Germany.
Germany, yes, that begins with a J, yes.
And Ghana, that's got a silent J.
Yes, it does have a silent J.
Jersey.
Well, that sounds like an incredible tour.
It was those three.
A lot of... long flights.
Well, it's really annoying because they booked us. We often have a night in Germany, then a night in Ghana or Jana, and then back to Germany again, alternate nights. So it's crazy.
That is crazy. But
you think you booked two nights in a row in the same country.
But at least you were probably playing to packed houses in those countries.
Yeah, I mean, more than seven.
Yeah, Rasta Howard is very popular, isn't he? Of course, people will want me to get on to the act that really propelled you into the wings, and that was sketch trio Dog's Big Dick, alongside Egg Nachos and the seldom-remembered Ian There. It was an incredible act. I remember seeing you back in the day as well. And you were legends, if I may say so, of the Edinburgh Fringe, by which I mean you did two shows followed by a best-of.
It was three, actually.
Was it three followed by a best-of?
Yeah.
Right.
I say three, but they bleed into each other, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah.
That sounds unsanitary.
That's my motto for life.
They bleed into each other.
Yeah.
And the they changes depending on context.
Yes.
Wow.
So it will be we.
We bleeds into each other.
Now it will be we.
We bleed into each other.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you feel you'd made it back then? Did you think, here are the dizzying heights of mediocrity I aspire to?
Yeah, well,
or even higher.
We were lucky enough to get our own television series.
Right, yes, of the same name.
Dog's Big Dick, on a celebrated television channel.
Mm. Do you remember what it was called?
It was called Shit Today.
Shit Today, yes.
And
not around these days, of course, because it was a very risky venture. I mean, everything they did was so risky. Because I remember with you, your show had a chaotic, raw, very jubilant atmosphere when viewed live. Mm. And then for some reason, on Shit Today, it was transplanted into a firm of actuaries in Guildford, but filmed like the National Lottery live. It was a very odd choice.
I mean, that's the great thing about Shit Today. They would try or get a concept.
Mm.
And they would say to themselves, how can we make this Shit Today?
Right.
And in pretty much all instances,
yes,
their concept was a roaring success.
So, yes, I mean, they, on their own terms, they got everything right.
Yeah.
But then, of course, nobody liked any of it because they made it Shit Today.
Yeah.
And so they folded after, what, three?
Oh, no, it's moved into...
Oh, has it changed name?
It's now... It's still a channel, but it's only on postcards.
Right.
So
that's
you have to subscribe to it, and they send their programmes
on postcards.
In written form.
Oh, in written form, not a frame at a time.
No, they just describe.
Not after 24 weeks, you get a single second of a programme.
There's only so much you can fit on a postcard.
It's very true.
So it's just a description of a scene, and then...
So it's actually an incredibly slow book, really, is what
but
they're doing.
It's really a roaring success, I think.
Yes. Are you still on Shit Today in that form?
I think I got a repeat fee, a postcard fee, I think, of around somewhere in the region of 4 pence.
4 pence, right.
But it was when I was with an agency called Everstrong.
Everstrong, yes.
And they take 95% of that.
Well, it's only fair. I mean, they do make the phone call for you.
And the administration costs are £1,000, so it's minus. It's £999.
I've never worked in administration, but it sounds like an incredibly risky business because it always costs an enormous amount of money, doesn't it?
Well, we didn't realise that. When we were in Dog's Big Dick and we all signed with Everstrong, our agency, who it's basically a cult of religious men, really religious,
very pious people.
Totally.
Yes.
They all wear white, they don't swear, and it's sort of monastic life where they give everything away.
Yes.
But the administration costs for that.
And there's nothing they can do about that. I'm sure they feel very humbled and sad that they have to pass all of that on to you.
Well, the thing
costs.
Is, it's a monastery, and they have to do everything with inks and with feathers.
Right.
So and
with quills, you mean?
Quills.
Yes.
Not
just inks and feathers in some other variety.
No. With quills.
Yes.
And, of course, every letter they do is just...
It's beautiful, isn't it? It brings a tear to the eye.
Yeah, but that takes... I think one letter takes 5 years.
Do you think signing with them was a misstep, ultimately?
Oh, no. I mean, if you look at the contracts now, they're absolutely beautiful.
Do you have them framed on the wall?
Well, no, not we're on in here, but you can't actually see them because we're in the pitch black,
dark. It's very dark. It is very dark. What are you wearing? What are you wearing? I don't know what you're wearing, so I want to try and picture it.
Old milk.
Oh, really? Oh, right. Interesting. I'm wearing a suit.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I can only apologise for what you might see when you leave.
So what happened to Dog's Big Dick in the end? Because ultimately you did all go your separate ways. Did you just sort of grow apart like teeth? Or was it more painful than that, like cystitis?
It was more cystitis, I think.
Right.
Really heavy cystitis.
Yeah. What happened? Talk me through it.
Well, there was three of us, of course.
Egg nachos, Andy, and there.
Egg nachos. He was an incredibly small man. He was only literally about 7 inches tall.
It's incredible, really. I mean, some of the shots in your TV show were very confusing because they had to get so low just to get him in.
Yeah, and he had to stand literally on the lip of the camera.
Right.
And shout at the top of his voice. And the sets were about, often, 100 to 200 metres deep.
Right.
For us to stand.
Just to get the angle right.
Yeah, just so it looked like we're all the same size.
Well, that seems to favour him a lot, actually, because he's near the director, he's near the microphones, and you're so far away. Did you know when a take had started?
Often we didn't. Right. Often it took so much time for the word action,
yes,
to go those... Because I don't know if you knew, sound travels a lot slower in recording studios.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we were only just start acting, often midway through the scenes. And poor Ian,
yes,
he often never heard the word action until... I know, it seemed like the next day.
So didn't start acting at all?
Yeah, well, no, didn't get the chance to.
And that was the end of it for you, was it? It was unworkable?
Well, it was just... We stopped speaking to each other because the distances were so far apart in filming.
Yes. I mean, presumably you were a lot closer to your own house.
I had to... I just had to walk to the bottom of the road.
Mm. And you were in shot.
And I was in the back of shot, yeah.
Wow.
So it's very easy.
It's very easy just to just go, oh, sod it, I'll just stay in bed.
Well, I did that. I started doing that towards... We did a pilot and I better go out of bed for that. So that was it. And in the end, the call came in and said, well, it's better if you just stay at home.
Fair enough. Fair
enough.
We'll
just leave Egg Nachos to stand on the lip of the camera.
And he's still standing on the lip of the camera, isn't he?
I think so.
Somewhere.
I think so. I
hope they gave him a lift down before they put it back in the box.
I only watch it today on postcards, so I don't actually know what's going on television.
But your career did continue after Dog's Big Dick and continued at a pace with television appearances on Yes Mate, Gone Shopping, That's Lynn, and BBC Three sitcom This Year's Men. Who's the best person you've worked with, would you say?
Are we talking with... is it on set? Are we talking about can we talk about catering?
If catering's been your favourite thing, we can talk about catering.
I think the catering
has always been the best.
Yes.
Any particular caterers stick out for you?
Yes Man?
Yes Mate.
Sorry, Yes Mate.
And the catering was good on that.
Oh, lovely bread and butter.
Bread and butter. That does sound above the normal catering you get given by the BBC.
You get it toasted, untoasted...
Yes.
Just as flour, unmade, unformed.
Sure. Deconstructed bread and butter.
Yeah, stale.
And
just been on the floor.
I mean, those options, and a vegetarian option.
Often you see catering, you just see three options. You've got five whole options there.
Yeah. And could you go for a mix? Could you go...
No, they wouldn't let you. That would be greedy.
They've got a system.
There's a whole lot of people waiting behind.
Mm. And I remember working on a BBC project once, and the catering was incredible on that. What they did was they'd hired a young girl fresh out of university to come round.
What do you mean by fresh?
As in recently out of university.
Okay, sure.
Rather than fetidly out of university some 12 years ago.
Sure.
And she would come round and go, I'm going to the petrol station on the corner, give me your money. And that was so nice because you wouldn't have to go to the petrol station yourself.
Oh, that sounded like when I did a programme called Nurses.
Oh, yes. What was that? Did you play a nurse?
No, I played a children's entertainer on it.
Right.
And it's a very prestigious programme. It's run at a slot at lunchtime on British television.
Right.
And it's got some of the best writing and acting and performances. And I was lucky enough to get a role in that. And because the food is so amazing, the gourmet a la carte food.
Right.
You have to bring your own money.
Absolutely. It's the only way to do it, isn't it? Otherwise, all of the budget for nurses would go on food.
If you'd like to see Inside the Comedian being recorded live, then we have a new monthly show at the King's Place Theatre in London. The next show is on Thursday, the 11th of April. Tickets are available from kingsplace.co.uk.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You and I actually worked together on BBC Two on a show called For Pity's Sake, Pretend It's Improvised. Do you remember that?
It was one of the... yes, it was For Pity's Sake, Pretend It's Improvised. They actually... I think they got it the wrong way round.
How so?
Well, they sort of improvised the making of the show.
That's right.
And but the actual show itself...
was not improvised.
Yeah, so it was the wrong way round.
That's right. It was, I think, maybe that someone had got the wrong end of the stick, because if I can explain to our listeners... the production team seemed to be making it all up as they went along, with no planning having gone into it at all, whereas we had been over-rehearsed, if anything, hadn't we? Do you remember? I mean, if we got a word wrong, we would be beaten.
Yes, it was a bit like a sort of regime where you would... a bit like a cult, really, where you'd be asked into this cult and asked to perform something and make something up.
Mm.
And then without realising it, 6 months later...
Yes.
You had to make up that exact same thing, word for word.
I mean, it really was a terrifying ordeal, wasn't it? I didn't realise I was in a cult until some 4 months after the show had been shit-canned. You know, it really just...
Well, that's a trick of cults.
It is, isn't
it? You don't realise you're in them.
No.
I remember almost, for BBC Two, almost no one watched it.
That's right.
Well, I mean, no one watched a whole episode.
Which was quite newsworthy, actually, because people are always watching BBC Two. They've just got it on in the background. You know, no matter what is on, there is a baseline level of viewers. And we dipped way below that. Like, we offended a lot of people, or certainly bored them to find their remotes.
I mean, it was the first time in British history a channel had no viewers.
No viewers whatsoever.
Yeah.
They could have actually put anything on, and legally they would have been fine because nobody had seen it. It was below a child doing... a one-man play for their parents. Below the
studio audience weren't. They actually stopped watching.
That's right.
One by one, I remember.
Their eyes stopped working.
And
didn't they?
Their heads turned round.
That's
they
right.
They would physically rip the chairs that had been bolted down. They would rip them out and force them back in with often their own heads, nailing them back in so their chairs would face the other way.
That's right. I remember one person. Just dislocating their jaw and shoving the chair as far down their own throat as possible just to have something to do other than watch it.
And, of course, when they made the programme, the sound of bones cracking and metal was so loud they had to put that canned laughter up to literally cover it.
Deafening levels. deafening
to cover, and you can still hear bones cracking and metal being the seats being wrenched.
In the studio we did it in, I mean, the echo still hasn't subsided. It was that loud.
People unscrewing bolts with their own teeth. Old ladies unscrewing bolts that have been stuck in for centuries, even.
Yes.
With their own teeth. It was almost incredible Hulk-like acts of strength for them people to not watch us try and remember things that we made up 6 months ago.
Yes. More recently, you were in the British television remake of successful prank format They're Always On, that came over from the United States. Was upsetting the public something that came naturally to you?
Oh, yes. I've always had a propensity to pick on the weak and vulnerable.
Right.
And this,
well, it's easy comedy, isn't it?
Yeah, we're natural.
Yes.
Natural behaviour.
Right.
And this was a chance to get paid for it.
Right. So, but did it make it easier that the people you were picking on had no idea they were on television and that you were any different from just a violent and dangerous madman on the street?
I mean, that's what it was. Again, the thing was we managed to use a lot of that canned laughter from Make It Up.
For pity's sake, pretend it's improvised. Yes, there was a lot of canned laughter left over that they just handed out in lieu of fees.
I didn't get paid, so I had literally about 8 minutes of the stuff.
Right, right.
And I was able to...
That's about 12 foot, isn't it? 12 foot of laughter.
I was able to play that in while I was interacting with people.
Which does take the edge off just how sinister you are.
Yeah.
But it still does come across that some of those people were genuinely afraid for their lives.
I mean, scared they're being approached by a murderer.
Right.
And a lot of instances, if the camera wasn't on, I would have...
Yes.
I would have killed them.
Do you have any other dreams, do you think? Any dreams that are left unsatisfied? Let me put it this way. If you were to walk home after this recording... I'm sorry, you are home. But if you were to walk around the streets, maybe looking for loose change or cigarettes, and you stumbled across a magical talking severed hand that said it would grant you 3 wishes, but they had to be relating to your career, what would you do?
I would like to be the face of milk.
All milk?
Yeah.
Interesting. Who's the face of milk at the moment?
Well, that's the thing. Milk hasn't got a face.
Milk hasn't got a face, has it?
And no one's really brought this up.
I mean, that's a disgraceful thing to happen and nobody to notice is milk doesn't have a face.
I think I'd like to be Christmas milk.
Christmas milk?
Because, you know, like Father Christmas goes on the Coca-Cola.
That's right. He's Christmas Coca-Cola, isn't he?
I would like to be...
He's not Coca-Cola the rest of the year round, though, is it? They clearly can't be bothered to pay him for that.
He's a bit in January.
That's depressing.
So when you've realised...
Yeah,
you've bought too much Coca-Cola, and he's still got to be that face for the first 2 weeks of January.
He is not always Coca-Cola.
Yeah, so I'd like to be the face of milk at Christmas, so people look forward to it when they see my face.
I'm looking forward to a glass of Christmas milk.
Yeah, holidays are coming.
That'd be lovely, actually. I can picture it right now.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one. You've got 2 more left.
I think I'd like to sort of play some Chinese roles.
Like spring roles?
No, play some Chinese people.
Oh, right, I see.
In films.
There's an emerging market for Chinese actors in films.
But you can't do it without being racist, can you?
Well, you can't, certainly, no.
Can you?
No, I can't either. Well, I'm not Chinese.
How would you do an impression of a Chinese person?
If someone said to you,
you've got a role with it,
yes. You
have got the role in the Chinese mega picture, the best role.
That's what it's called, the Chinese mega picture.
Yeah, that's how they market things out there.
Right.
You've got the best role in the Chinese mega picture, but you have to be Chinese.
Yes.
You take it. You need the money. You're living in a bin.
I'm living in a bin.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I'm just...
Are you trying? Are you getting? Have you been cast in a Chinese mega picture? Are you?
Well, I'm asking you.
Yes. What I would do?
Yes.
Well, I think heavy prosthetic makeup would be needed.
But voice wise,
I'd probably stay the same as I am.
But they said, they want you to sound
Chinese.
Yeah.
Interesting. Then I'd probably.
Well, just give me a couple of sound bites.
You see, I'm far better at Japanese. I would know exactly what to do with Japanese.
That's fine.
Which is basically, if you've seen the film The Phantom Menace.
Yes.
Incredible film. I absolutely love it. There is nothing wrong with it at all. It's the Trade Federation are basically Japanese fish betrayers. And I would talk, that's basically what I
mean. Oh, we should not have done this.
That's basically what I would do.
I think to avoid that thing of me being racist, yes. I would become Chinese.
You'd become Chinese.
I would have
to stop Chinese.
So they couldn't say, "Oh right, that he's not doing a Chinese impression because he is now Chinese."
Right. So you would have prosthetic surgery to change your physical appearance to be Chinese.
Yes.
How would you change your vocal appearance, your vocal sound?
Just do what you did then.
But that's Japanese.
Whoa.
I mean, they are distinctly different countries. It is like doing a saying you're doing a Spanish accent, you're actually doing a German one.
So I mean, maybe I could get myself to look Japanese and then just do it as a maybe that's close enough.
You'd be turning Japanese.
Yeah. Which I've practiced doing.
Have you?
Yes.
How have you practiced turning Japanese?
Alone? Yes.
It's the best way to do it. And your third wish, what would that be?
My third wish would probably just to do a bit of a stint in the circus.
The circus?
Yeah.
Is that your first love, would you say, the circus? What role? Would you stand on a horse in a pretty leotard or would you...
Yes.
Is that what you want to do?
Yes.
Stand on the back of a horse in a pretty leotard?
Yes, in a glittering leotard with hair, my hair flowing. I like to have the horse's mane and my hair like a horse's mane as well.
Sort of a duality of the two, like you are one, you are part horse.
Yeah.
And the horse is part Marit Larwood.
Yeah, centaur. I would like to centaur myself with... I would like to cut the head and neck off a horse.
Mm.
And stitch myself into it.
I mean, that is a very different request to the one we started on, which was you being in a circus. You're now saying you want to mutilate a horse and yourself.
And live inside. I want to create a new being.
A new being, which is a sort of centaur. What would you cut off yourself?
Just from everything from the dick down.
Right, but the dick down. So wherever it dangles to, what sort of...
The top of the dick down.
Top of the dick down.
Why would you want a normal dick when you have a horse's dick?
Well, why not have both?
Well, I'd have the... Then you have a normal dick at the front.
That's right.
Well, no, you can't do that. It ruins the muscle structure.
Could you not... be entirely intact within the body of the horse.
If you want to be taken seriously.
No, that's a very good
point. And you'd have to kneel down the whole time. I don't know if you've ever had to kneel down.
Inside a horse, I have not.
Yeah, very uncomfortable.
Is it? Very bony in there, right?
Yeah, awful.
Would you let anyone ride you, do you think, if you were a centaur?
In what way?
I mean sitting on your back in the style of riding a horse rather than ride you in the sort of sexy time style.
Putting the dick in my horse's ass.
That was not my question.
It depends whether I had to have reins or not.
Because
I wouldn't like to have a metal bar, you know, deep in my mouth choking me.
No, you're right. That would be nasty. And you don't really want to be whipped on the bottom either to go faster.
No. Although I would enter myself in the Grand National.
When you say enter yourself...
Yes.
You would compete?
Both.
Wonderful. Well, Marit Larwood, thank you for letting me inside you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Comedian with me, David Reed. That's the last in this third series of Inside the Comedian. For news on further series and our live recordings, please go to MrDavidReed.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.